Welcome to this latest edition, this very special Sunday edition of the Real Deal Podcast. Of course, I'm your host, Cyril Gerald Quinn. Episode 838 of the Real Deal Podcast. This episode is brought to you by All Calculated Measures. Shout out to Adrian McDonald. Got some new merchandise on the way. We will definitely be giving you a taste of that as far as what it's looking like. So shout out to him. I haven't done a Sunday podcast seemingly in months. It's been a long. I think we did one with Robert Sapp and Chad Quinn. That was back in February. I think it was the Harden trade to Philly. So it's been a while, but you know, this one had to be done. As we all know, on Thursday, Kevin Durant demanded a trade from the Brooklyn Nets. His time up there seemingly is over. This is despite the fact that he signed a four-year extension, supermax extension last summer, and seemed to at least be committed to them for the foreseeable future, at least this year and next year, I would think. But that was not a case. Of course, this was the season from hell for the Brooklyn Nets for a variety of reasons. And look, we've done that dance over the course of this year. We know why they are in their current predicament. I don't even want to go back into that. The bottom line is Kevin Durant wants out. The history of the NBA, the recent history of the NBA says that Kevin Durant is going to get his wish. He's requested, of course, Phoenix and Miami. And we're going to go through a couple of Durant traits. This is the thing about this, right? About Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant, from a basketball standpoint, I don't know Kevin Durant personally, but from a basketball standpoint, Kevin Durant seemingly will never be happy. Never be happy. He's been in every single type of situation you could be in. He's been in a situation, young team developing, homegrown draft picks with, you know, Harden, Russell Westbrook, Ibaka, Nick Collison, and, you know, guys like that. They get to the finals. That wasn't good enough because, you know, Russell Westbrook was Russell Westbrook. I understand why he went out there after 9 years. He had put in his work. He carried that franchise. He was the signature player in that franchise, won the MVP, played, you know, game in, game out, was during that time period the second best player in the world. So I have no problem. I had no problem with him going wanting out. Now you can knock him for joining a 73-win team that just came back against him 3-1 in the 2016 conference finals. You want to knock him for that, saying he took the easy way out? Sure. He did take the easy way out. He joined a ready-made super team, a ready-made team that he would make and turn into a super team, and they would dominate for basically the next 2 years and would have three-peated had he not gotten injured in 2019. So that wasn't good enough because Steph Curry got too much of the credit. And despite the fact that he was the best player on the team, Steph Curry was still the one. It was still Steph's franchise. Okay, you want to do your own thing? You want to get out of the shadow, so to speak, of Steph Curry? Voila, the Brooklyn Nets. Brooklyn Nets give you the keys to the kingdom, per se. You can call. You have all the power. You want to root. Who do you want to play with? Kyrie Irving. Okay, we're getting Kyrie Irving, despite the fact that he had just, you know, despite the fact that a franchise got better without him in terms of the Boston Celtics. Their players, you know, they went to the conference finals without him in 2018, and he played miserably in 2019 in the playoffs against Milwaukee, losing in 5 games. But we still want the top point guards in the league, still very young. He's your guy. You can have him. Cool. Who you want to coach your team? Not Kenny Atkinson. Atkinson, who had helped help with the player development of the young Brooklyn Nets and got them to the playoffs. Not good enough. Very good coach. You want him out? Bring in Steve Nash with no prior coaching experience. So again, DeAndre Jordan. Hey, he's your guy. We know DeAndre Jordan can't play anymore, despite the fact that you have a future all-star on your team in Jared Allen. We didn't know that at the time, but a guy who clearly was the best big man that you had on that team. He gets playing time. instead of he gets playing time instead of DeAndre Jordan until Steve Nash kind of comes to his senses and say, hey, I need to play Jared Allen. So everything, Durant got everything he wanted and then some, but it still was not enough. Still wasn't enough. Even a Supermax contract last year, which he should have gotten. Anybody would have gave him that contract. Had no problem with that. And this is how he repays the Brooklyn Nets with 7 playoff wins, 1 playoff series win, and a bunch of games where he missed due to injury. Remember, he didn't play the first year with the Achilles. Okay. Missed a ton of action this season with the MCL. So again, I don't know what's going to make Kevin Durant happy. I just don't, from a basketball standpoint. I frankly don't ever see Kevin Durant being happy from a basketball standpoint. The perfect situation where he was the best player on the team and was Golden State. He could have won 6, 7. There's no telling how many championships he could have won in Golden State. There's no telling. So now, we're kind of back to, looking for this, this perfect situation. Looking for a situation, this perfect situation that doesn't exist. Now, he wants Miami. He wants Phoenix. These are two stable organizations with great cultures, with leadership. But again. Situations where he would be the best player if he joined him, depending on what you have to give up to get him. But again, you can't have it all. You cannot have everything without giving up something. And that's the problem with Kevin Durant. He wants everything, but does not want to give up anything. And what I mean by that is, if you want to be considered one of the top 10 players, top 5 players of all time, Mount Rushmore players, you got to be a leader. You got to call guys out. You got to hold people accountable, be other than yourself. And that's not Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is not a leader. If Kevin Durant were a leader, he would have held Kyrie Irving accountable, period. Hey, man, you either whiff it, you either get vaccinated, or you can just stay home. It's just that simple. We got guys that are here committed to winning a championship, period. And maybe James Harden is still on the team. Maybe things don't go, the way they went. But he's not a leader. And again, those 10 guys I have on my list of top 10, 11 players of all time, all those guys, with the exception of Wilt Chamberlain, and Wilt was so dominant. Wilt was just that talented and that dominant that it didn't even matter that he was a leader. He has to be considered amongst the top 10 players. It's just not an issue. But even with Wilt Chamberlain, had Wilt Chamberlain been a leader, how many championships would Wilt have? Wilt would have 6, 5, 6, 7, 8 of his own, to be honest with you. That was the difference between Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain. Leadership, mental toughness, and leadership. Those intangibles that were missing from Wilt Chamberlain. Same, similar to Kevin Durant. Lots and couple similarities between Kevin Durant, Wilt Chamberlain, and Aaron Rodgers. These supernova talented players whose talent allows them to get away with just about everything outside of criminal activity off the court. Kevin Durant can do this to a franchise and still be the most wanted player in the sport. Because he averaged 30 points and shot 52% from the field last year. But the bottom line is, he is not a leader, period. He's not a leader. And that is, again, that is what separates the guys, whether it's LeBron, Kobe, RIP, Bill Russell, Magic, Bird, Steph Curry, Shaq, Tim Duncan. That is what separates those guys from Kevin Durant. Not talent, because on talent, Kevin Durant is probably, I would say, one of the top 5 players in the history of the league. On pure talent and basketball skills, he is without question a top 5 player. Period. But again, You cannot have everything without giving up something. It just doesn't, life doesn't work that way. So now if you're the Brooklyn Nets, despite the fact that Kevin Durant only has made a demand to the Phoenix and Miami, if you're the Brooklyn Nets, you have to absolutely do what is in the best interest of your franchise. We all know you cannot afford to tank because the Houston Rockets control your draft for the next 5 years. Tanking is not going to work, period. You got to go out there and win games. You got to go out there and put the best product out there on the floor, period. So you have to get the best players. You have to get guys that can help you win along with a shitload of first-round draft picks. So here are a couple of deals I looked at just to have some fun. Via the NBA trade machine, there's one trade machine that does the picks and the salary cap, which is light years better than the one ESPN has. It's a new one that I looked on. So if I'm trading, the Phoenix deal is more complicated than people realize because of you can't take in Phoenix. The Nets cannot directly take on DeAndre Ayton without being over the luxury tax. So this is why that deal more than likely will be a three-team deal. So the Nets would get Mikal Bridges, Jay Crowder, Cam Johnson, and 5 first-round picks, 3 of which would be unprotected. I would say 5 first-round picks, 23, 25, 27, 29, 31, 2 pick swaps in 26 and 28. And I would say the unprotected picks would be in 23, 25, and 27, unprotected 29 and 31. That is so you're getting a guy in Mikal Bridges who is a notch below all-star, one of the best defensive players in the league, finished 2nd in defensive player of the year. Jay Crowder, a veteran player, streaky three-point shooter, but been on a number of winning teams in terms of the playoffs, getting to the finals. Cam Johnson, a perfect 3-and-D guy. Again, a guy who's went to a Final Four in North Carolina, been to an NBA Finals, still very young and on a reasonable contract. And again, the 5 first-round picks, those are assets. Those are first-round picks are some of the most valuable currency in the NBA. So you can't do, yes, more than likely, Phoenix. And again, we don't know how long Phoenix is going to be good. Phoenix, like Chris Paul, Kevin Durant are not getting any younger. So maybe those picks, maybe that was, especially in 2025, like those picks could be, especially if they're unprotected. Those picks are unprotected. There's no telling, how you might get a top 5 pick. Utah gets DeAndre Ayton. So Utah gets DeAndre Ayton. You replace Rudy Gobert. You get a guy who has still only 23 years old, has all-star talent caliber potential, is a very good defensive player. I'm not as down on DeAndre Ayton as a lot of people are. You're getting a guy, again, we know how hard it is to draw stars and free agents to Utah. Utah has to come out. Utah would be a perfect number 3 team for this trade. So they get DeAndre Ayton, again, 23-year-old who has potential to be 20-10 for the next 10 years. Phoenix gets Durant and 2 first-round picks from Utah that are protected, 23, 25, kind of recoup some of that draft capital that they would have to give up to the Nets. So to me, everybody wins in that standpoint. Everybody. Phoenix instantly is going to be a contender. You have Booker, Paul, Durant. You can build around that easily. If you can't build around that, then you need a new general manager. James Jones should be, you can build around that. They still have picks. Those picks, they can use those picks to trade. To get assets and assets during the trade deadline in February, they'll be instant contenders. Now you're giving up a lot in terms of Bridges, Crowder, and Johnson. Those are three rotation players. You're giving up a lot, but again, you still have Durant, Booker, and Paul and, you know, Shamet, they still have some other pieces that they can get. You have some, you know, there'll be a number of guys wanting to come to Phoenix to ring chase that will take small, that will take minimum contracts to play with Chris Paul and Kevin Durant. This is the one that's fascinating to me, that I would be very nervous if I were a Phoenix fan. Toronto. Remember, Toronto has a history with, they pulled off, they pulled off some big trades in the past. They pulled off the Kawhi Leonard. Masai is a brilliant, brilliant front office man, one of the best in the league, done the best in the league, and especially doing these deals. He will take his shots and without hesitation. So Brooklyn, apologies for misspelling Brooklyn. Toronto gets Durant. Brooklyn gets Scottie Barnes, Anobe, Chris Boucher, and four first-round picks, two pick swaps. Three of the first-round picks would be protected. The 29 pick would be unprotected. You're getting, to me, if I'm the Brooklyn Nets, I think this is as more, that this, to me, would be more enticing than the Phoenix trade, because I'm getting Scottie Barnes. Scottie Barnes has all-star potential. Scottie Barnes could be a five to eight time all-star. He could be an all-NBA type player. He can be a franchise player in this league who's under a rookie deal. Anobe is still very young. Boucher, those guys are very good players. Defensive players, versatile players that can play, that can guard multiple positions. We know they come from a great culture in Toronto. But the key to me is Scottie Barnes. You get Scottie Barnes if you're Brooklyn and the four first round picks. I mean, you can build something special with that. Toronto, of course, you put Durant with Siakam, Fred VanVleet. That's an instant championship contender, period. Siakam can move back to being a second best player. Fred VanVleet, their third best player. You can win a championship with that squad easily. You can get to the finals. But that, watch out for Toronto. Watch out for Toronto. Don't be surprised if he lands in Toronto. If Masai can convince Durant to come to Toronto, that deal can happen. That is more, again, I like what they can offer just as much, if not more, than what Phoenix can offer. And I like Phoenix's package. I mean, Bridges, Crowder, Johnson, and the five first-round picks would be a great package. But that Toronto package, you're talking about getting Scottie Barnes, a guy, again, 21 years old, 20 years old on a rookie salary. Yeah, that would be very enticing if I'm the Brooklyn Nets. And just for fun, even though he probably doesn't want to play in New Orleans, but just for fun, because they have so many assets, Pelicans get Durant, Brooklyn gets Brandon Ingram, Jonas Valanciunas, and five first-round picks, 23, 24, 25, 27, 29. The 24 pick, I know normally the rule is you can't trade your own pick in consecutive years, but that 24 pick comes from L.A. So that I wonder if the machine allowed me to do it. They may not be able to do that, but considering that's their second first-round pick that came from the Lakers, you might be able to do that. I'm not sure. I'm not always sure about that. But regardless, let's take that pick out, 23, 25, 27, 29, and probably even 31. And I would have the 31 and 29s be unprotected. I would demand that be unprotected if I'm Brooklyn. So you're getting five first-round picks, and you're getting a all-star caliber player who's, what, 25, 24 years old, Brandon Ingram. I think Ingram's 25, coming off his best season. He played great in the playoffs against Phoenix. And Valanciunas is a rebounding machine and a tough physical player down low who's on a very good contract. And you could even use him as a trade piece. So that's a very good deal as well. I see that as a pipe dream. I don't see Durant ending up in New Orleans, but they do have the assets to go after Durant. I don't think this thing is going to last until the season come. I don't think that this is going to be something that is carried on into the season. I know a lot of people are saying, well, hey, Brooklyn has the power. They really don't have to trade Durant because he's under contract for four more years. and you could dare him to sit out the season and hold out. He loves to play basketball. You can try it. You can risk that. But let's think about this. One of the reasons why they're willing to just blow this thing up is because Josiah and the other, their organization did not want to deal, remotely want to deal with everything, with all the headaches and everything they had to deal with this past year with Kyrie and all the stuff that went on and everything. Just it was taxing to the organization, taxing to the players in the locker room. Do you really want to go in a season with, they're going to trade Kyrie. Kyrie is gone. Like he's not going to be on the team. But do you really want to go to the season with the black cloud that is Kevin Durant, who you know, let's say Durant refuses to play. You want to go into season with that hanging over your franchise and having nothing to show for it? Do you really like, is that like, what, how do you sell that to your fan base? What does that look like going into the season? Again, I think you can get a great deal right here, right now. I don't think waiting. Now, you might be able to wait and get a better deal. Maybe. That's a possibility. You might wait and get a better deal, but chances are, I just think that you don't want to go into the season with that black cloud hanging over your head for your franchise. We'll see what Brooklyn does. Brooklyn has more power than what people think. They could wait until the trade deadline. They could just say, hey, Kevin, you're under contract. This is going to happen. We're looking for the best possible deal. And by the way, they should absolutely get the best possible deal, period. They should get the best possible deal. So the other big trade that was made was the Minnesota Timberwolves. And you see they get, so the Timberwolves trade Rudy Gobert. Kind of saw this coming a little bit. Brian Windhorst was on top of this, even though he didn't call it, but he did say something was strange going on in Utah when they traded Royce O'Neal to Brooklyn for a first round pick. Now again, I don't know how much he kind of put out some breadcrumbs there. He didn't call this, but he kind of said something was going on in Utah. So give him credit for that. But Timberwolves just completely go all in. They get Rudy Gobert. The Jazz get 4 first round picks, 3 unprotected and a top 5 protected in 2020 and 29, a 26 pick swap. And they also trade 5 players to the Utah Jazz. Minnesota, of course, gets Rudy Gobert. Gobert, of course, is the best rim protector in basketball, has been all NBA, is a suspect offensive player. We know he's not a good offensive player, but he is a he's one of the best defensive players in the league, has been defensive player of the year, has won the award 3 times. So we know what we're getting from Rudy Gobert. Here's the thing about this deal. First thing I thought about this deal was how does this impact Anthony Edwards? So Rudy Gobert will enter Minnesota as their third best player, period. You have Anthony Edwards, Cat, and Rudy Gobert. And from the option in terms of offensive option, he's probably their fourth option offensively behind those three and also D'Angelo Russell. So to me, the fit is perfect from that standpoint because he has no effect negatively on Anthony Edwards. Matter of fact, with his defensive presence in the middle, that will allow Edwards and some of their other perimeter defensive players to be more aggressive, to take more chances. On the perimeter, they were a decent defensive team last year. They were 14th rating, but they just gave up too many offensive rebounds. The rim protection was terrible, and I got exposed against Memphis. So I don't have a problem with this deal. Their championship contention is going to depend on the development of Anthony Edwards, period. Also, you have D'Angelo Russell, who's coming up on the contract year. He could be flipped and used as a trade asset. So keep that in mind. But you are banking that, number one, you know, Karl Anthony Towns has begged basically to be, you know, wants to be a four, not a five. We know Karl Anthony Towns can spread the floor. Gobert will be in the paint. And so there will be plenty of space for the, for your perimeter players with Towns spread, with Towns taking other guys out to the three-point line. We know he's one of the best jump shooting centers in the league, if not the best, period. So that, and Gobert is a defensive player, one of the better, a defensive player, great defensive player, and also a excellent rebounder. Gobert is also always amongst the top five players in rebounding, leaders in rebounding. So he'll clean up that. Again, this is about, to me, the development of Anthony Edwards. What their near future depends on what Anthony Edwards becomes and his development. This will be year three for him. So I don't blame Minnesota for making this move. I think this makes them a better team. A lot of people say, yeah, it's a lot of draft picks, but keep in mind, those unprotected picks, 23, 25, and 27, Minnesota is a young team. They probably will be, especially 23, 25, will be in them. Those will be like late picks. Those will be late picks. And who knows in 2027, who knows in 2029? That's, you know, that's a lot can happen in the NBA between now and then. But so I don't get to, listen, they gave up a lot to get Gobert, but you have to understand, you're Minnesota. You're not drawing free agents. Free agents are not coming to play for Minnesota, right? They have to draft well, develop talent, and also land and make these type of deals, period. So when they have to swing for the fences. They cannot play it close to the best. No one is clamoring to play in Minnesota as a free agent. With the weather, with like, it's just the history of the franchise. There's no one, like, no one is clamoring to play there. They're trying to build something. Again, I like what they're doing. I like, you know, listen, Tim Connelly came from Denver. He's a top general manager. He knows what he's doing. He can find these players in the second round off the scrap meet that can, you know, develop and help teams and help a team win. But then again, this is all about, to me, the development of Anthony Edwards. In terms of Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert is a defensive guy. Towns is an offensive guy. It's just that simple. These are not two guys. These guys are completely polar opposites as far as their skill set. So again, Gobert is going to be catching lobs, getting offensive rebounds, getting defensive rebounds, protecting the paint. Towns is going to be on the perimeter. Period. That's how it's going to play out. Towns does not like to be in the post, so there should be plenty of space for the Anthony Edwards and D'Angelo Russells of the world to operate. For dribble, there should be plenty of space for dribble penetration. Now again, you know, those guys, and plus you can stagger their minutes. They don't have to be on the floor all the time at the same time. That's the thing, that's the beauty of this. Like you can create lineups where you have a Towns lineup, you have a Gobert lineup. So again, as far as what they gave up, listen, Malik Beasley, inconsistent player, has had some off the court issues. Pat Beverly, aging veteran, nice player. I heard something that he changed the culture. I'm like, yeah, that's not good. I mean, he helped get them to the playoffs. But Pat Beverly is a nice role player. Leandro Bomaro, Walker Kessler, we don't just got into the league. Jared Vanderbilt is a very, I like Vanderbilt a lot. Played well in the playoffs. He's probably the most valuable of those guys, But they kept Jay McDaniels, which was very key. And Utah wanted McDaniels. So that's a good job by Conley to keep McDaniels. And again, you have Torian Prince. They have other guys, perimeter players. They have, they have a very good team. Minnesota is going to be a team to watch. They could be a sneaky team to get out the Western Conference. They could be, I don't see it. I don't think it's going to happen, but they can be one of those teams that, you know, if everything breaks right, they could be in the Western Conference Finals. I'll say that. Not the NBA. They would eat, if everything broke right, they're not going to the NBA Finals because the West is too deep, especially at the top. But they could be in the Western Conference Finals, to me. So, yeah, Durant, Gobert, kind of controlling the weekend narratives of the NBA. A lot, of course, happened with the free agent deals. We're not going to go through every deal. Here are the deals that I separated them into two categories. I had deals that I understand, and I had deals that were head scratches. Now, there were a couple. There were some deals that were just no brainers. Devin Booker getting his money is no brainer. Jokic getting his money is no brainer. Okay, even Zion getting his money is a semi no brainer. But here are some of the deals that I understand. You said Nurkic 4 years, $70 million. Not a lot of money for a center who's a very good defensive player, good passer, tough player. Again, your Portland Trail is the Portland Trail Blazers. They don't draw a lot. They don't draw a lot of talent as far as free agency goes. All right, that's a solid contract. Darius Garland, 5 years, $193 million, a rookie max. Basically a borderline supermax. It's just a notch below supermax. You want to say, wow, that's a lot of money for coming off of a guy who's only had one great year. Yes, but again, he is a young player, 22 years old. You are projecting what he's going to be. You're projecting that he's going to get better. You're building something in Cleveland around he himself, Jared Allen, as well as, of course, Evan Mobley. They have a lot of young pieces. They re-signed Rubio for a nice contract. I understand that contract because they think that Garland could be a five-time All-Star. They think Garland could be a perennial All-Star type player. And again, it's market value, and that contract does not destroy your franchise. Because again, how far Cleveland is going to go is going to be hinging on the development of Evan Mobley. If Evan Mobley becomes the type of player which we think he can become as a franchise player, that is a guy that can be a superstar, then the Garland deal becomes an afterthought, period. Like, because it's all about Evan Mobley. So that deal has no effect on the development of Evan Mobley. Lou Dort, 5 years, $87 million. A lot of people were down on this deal. I'm not one of them. You know why? Because Lou Dort is a all-NBA caliber defensive player, number one. Number two, he's improved offensively every year, and he's still very young. Dort is only like 23 years old. So, again, you are projecting what a player is going to be when you give him this type of money. And, again, it doesn't have – it. If you're Oklahoma City, you have to spend your money somewhere. You have to pay somebody. So it doesn't, like, this is not a, it's not even a max deal. This is a deal that you're going to have to pay guys who are, I'm not going to call him a full two-way player. Maybe he's a semi two-way player. A excellent defensive player who has improved greatly as an offensive player. Now, where you can, and you have to realize it's Oklahoma City. Certain teams have to somewhat overpay because they cannot draw free agents or other guys of that ilk. And they clearly, again, they're watching them every day. They know more about them than you and me from that standpoint. Again, I know a lot of people were not high on this contract. I had zero problem with the contract, and I understand the contract. Carl Anthony Towns, 4 years, $224 million. You want to say that's a guy that is superstar money? That is a guy who's the best player on a championship team. Very fair points. Here's what I say. Right, you're Minnesota. You're building something. Okay, Carl Anthony Towns is still a very young player, 26 years old. He still can get better. If you don't pay him that money, someone on the open market is going to give him a contract. How are you replacing that production? What are you replacing that production with? Anthony Edwards at this time is not ready to be a number one guy. So you need Karl-Anthony Towns to be the number one until Anthony Edwards develops into that guy. Now, again, it is a lot of money. That is supermax money. Karl-Anthony Towns only been in the playoffs, what, twice in his career? Didn't play well in the playoffs last year. We know he had trouble. I have some issues. I think Towns offensively is as good as any big man in the league. Defensively, he just doesn't bring it every night. And to be honest with you, I think Towns falls into the category of all-star. I don't think Towns will ever be a superstar. But this is a deal that you have to make if you're a Minnesota, because you're the Minnesota Timberwolves. You're a small market trying to build something. You can't replace the production. You've shown that you haven't been great at developing talent and drafting. And again, I trust Tim Connelly. Don't tell me you can't say that Tim Connelly did not have this in mind. Like, this wasn't like Tim Connelly didn't think about this. So again, you can move him. This is a trade chip. He's a trade piece. You can move Karl-Anthony Towns eventually. To be honest with you, he's going to be around 24 points and around 8 to 10 rebounds, shoot 40% from three. He's going to be a productive all-star caliber player, period. So if it doesn't work out, if you feel like he's getting in the way of Anthony Edwards' development, you can flip him for some draft picks, flip him for some players, some better pieces around Anthony Edwards and keep him moving. But for right now, he belongs on the team. And of course, Zion 5 for $193 could be worth up to $231. It's semi no brainer. You are paying for. People forget Zion the year before last was 27-7 and almost 4 assists and shot 60% from the field. He has franchise superstar caliber talent. He just needs to be on the floor. You are paying for what you think Zion could be. And again, he is a trade chip. He's a trade chip, period. Somebody else would give him the money. And I'm not, again, I understand Zion has not lived up to the billing as far as being on the court. When he's been on the court, he's produced at a high level. I get it. Especially in comparisons to Ja Morant. We know Ja Morant's clearly been the better player, clearly the player that you would want to start your franchise with. That's not even a question. But I'm not ready. He's too young to give up on. He's just too young, and there's too much there. That talent is still the talent is still undeniable. A lot of people want to give up on Zion. I'm not one of them. This is a big year for Zion. I think Zion could be an All-NBA caliber player. I think Zion can, you know, with the way the direction their franchise is going, maybe he sees like, hey, I could be part of something special. I'm not ready to give up on him. I totally understand this deal. Before I get to deals that were kind of head scratchers, the Victor Wembanyama sweepstakes have begun. Victor Wembanyama, of course, is a generational talent from France, 7'2". He is Rudy Gobert. He has Rudy Gobert's defense, but with a great offensive game in terms of his pull-up jump shot, his three-point shot, putting the ball on the floor. He will be the number one pick in 2020 in next year's draft. And you're going to see a lot of teams begin to tank for this guy. And the first one that was obvious is the San Antonio Spurs. They trade DeJounte Murray for Atlanta for 3 first-round picks and Gallinari, who ended up with the Celtics, and a future pick swap. Again, excellent move for Atlanta. We'll see. Murray is a very good defensive player, excellent playmaker. Atlanta needs. This is a big year for Atlanta. Atlanta also can move John Collins for some picks and some better pieces as well. So Atlanta needs to bounce back off that embarrassing playoff showing they had against Miami, where they were embarrassed and also just had a bad year. Atlanta did not play well coming off a conference finals in 2021. So this was a necessary move for them. But from a Spurs perspective, they do get 3 first-round picks and a pick swap. But more importantly, the Spurs know that they're not going anywhere. And the Spurs want to be right in the mix for Victor Wembanyama. Period. That's all there is to it. The Spurs are not. The Spurs probably will win 20 games this year. They will be amongst the worst teams in the league. I promise you. Even with, I know that's not the Spurs way, but, you know, listen, we've seen the Spurs do this before. When David Robinson got hurt, they were clearly tanking in 1997, period, 96-97 season. And it played off. They hit the lot, hit the jackpot, got Tim Duncan in 97 draft, and their franchise never looked back after that. So it's not like they don't have a history of tanking. They just haven't had to because of the sustained excellence with Duncan, Tony Parker, Ginobili, Kawhi Leonard, and what have you. But they're in full tank mode at this point. Period. There were some free agency head scratchers. Bradley Beal, 5 years, $251 million. First of all, Bradley Beal, great ambassador as far as what he's done for the Washington Wizards. They recently built some courts on Banneker that was dedicated. He's a great locker room guy. I personally like Bradley Beal at the person as far as what you see him doing off the court, period. Humble, the whole nine yards, and I'm a fan of his game. But when you pay somebody $250 million, a supermax, that guy has to be a superstar generational talent, a number one guy at worst the number two guy on a championship team. Bradley Beal is not a number one guy on a championship team, period. And it makes zero sense for the Wizards to pay him because people are not running to Capital One Center to watch Bradley Beal, period. The Wizard fan base is not a bad. This is a football town. Everybody knows that. So to me, it would have made way more sense to sign him and trade him. There are a number of teams that would have went after Bradley Beal who think they are Bradley Beal away from winning a championship. So I don't understand what the Wizards are doing from this standpoint. Again, great for Bradley Beal and his family to get that money. If somebody's willing to give it to you, you don't give it back. But as far as the Wizards goes, to me, this deal made no sense whatsoever. None. Especially for guys, you know, Bradley Beal is 29 years old. He's getting up there a little bit. So I would have signed and traded Bradley Beal and retooled around some of the younger talent that the Wizards have. Zach LaVine, 5 years for $215 million, to me, for the Chicago Bulls, made absolutely zero sense. So you're basically saying that this is your team. This is the type of deal that wrecks franchises. All those guys you have are locked in. Lonzo Ball, DeRozan, LaVine, Vucevic. This is your team. Like this is who your team is. I think that they signed Drummond. Okay. But this is your team. The team cannot improve anymore. And Zach LaVine is a guy who is a one-dimensional player, doesn't guard anybody. We know he's a special scorer. We know he can shoot the ball. Excellent offensive player, but Zach LaVine is the second best player on that team. You're giving a guy who's your second best player. DeRozan is the best player on that team. You're giving a guy who's the second best player on that team basically, in essence, a supermax deal. Zach LaVine will never be the best player on a team that can compete for the championship. Zach LaVine will never be the second best player on a team that can compete for the championship. Zach LaVine, probably on a team that's competing for a championship, is the third best guy. If I put Zach LaVine on Milwaukee, he would be their third best player behind Giannis and Jrue Holiday. If I flip Middleton for LaVine, if I put Zach LaVine on the Miami Heat, he would be their third best player behind Jimmy Butler and Bam. If I put Zach LaVine on the Sixers, he would be their third best player, probably more likely, even with Harden at this state. You kind of get where I'm coming from here? Zach LaVine would be the third best player on the Warriors. He's not better than Andrew Wiggins. He's not, as a two-way, especially as a two-way player. He's not. So you, on championship-caliber teams, Zach LaVine is a number three, a clear number three. You don't give. These are the types of contracts that set franchises back. And by the way, you are Chicago. You have six championship trophies in your trophy case. You are Chicago, a historic town, a historic franchise. You shouldn't be in a mindset to where you feel like you have to overpay players like this to wreck your franchise for the future. Again, great for Zach LaVine, bad for the Chicago Bulls. They should never sign They should have never signed LaVine to this type of money, period. They have no flexibility to moving forward. And they were a team, I don't see, now again, if they get a healthy Lonzo Ball back, maybe they can get to the second round. Maybe. Not as good as Milwaukee. They're not as good as the Sixers. They're not as good as Miami. Hell, I don't even think they're as good as Toronto, to be honest with you. So this is a move that I would not have made. Again, Bradley Beal and Zach LaVine, these are moves that hurt your franchises moving forward if you keep those guys on your team. Now, again, is Zach LaVine a tradable contract? I don't know. I don't know how many takers would be out there for Zach LaVine at that number. I don't. So, again, teams, you gotta be careful when you pay these all-star guys, these guys who have been all-stars, like when you pay them like superstars, gotta be very careful. Because it can definitely set your franchise back. That's gonna wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I will see you next time. If anything breaks with Kevin Durant, we will be on that and putting out this content. Have a great rest of your weekend. So long.